Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. I'm so excited to tell you all about my guest on today's show. She's an impressive woman, and I know you're going to love hearing her story. Here's a hint. In 2018, she was named one of Adweek's most powerful women in sports and on Sports Business Journal's renowned Game Changers list. I'll tell you all about her, but first, thank you for tuning in from across Canada and so many other countries like the USA, UK, Austria, Mexico, and Australia, to name a few. It's great to have all of you joining us. I'm so glad you love to listen every week to the inspiring guests we feature. These are important conversations with the unafraid, and they keep our fearless community growing. So tell your friends to listen and follow us on Instagram. Hey, and if you don't already have one, pick up a copy of my beautiful best-selling book, Fearless, Girls with Dreams, Women with Vision. Find it at your favorite local bookstore or online at Amazon, Chapters, Barnes & Nobles, and others. Well, many trailblazers have been on the show. Today's guest, however, is at the top of the list. Laura Price is the Executive Vice President of HBSC and Chief Operating Officer of the Philadelphia 76ers. In her position as COO, she oversees the 76ers' business operations, corporate and team communications, and public relations. Whew, it keeps going. Including the renowned community engagement arms for one of the National Basketball Association's most storied franchises. I have to tell you some more about her. Her bio is so impressive. With a 25 plus years of NBA experience, she acts as the team's primary intermediary with the league office and is the key liaison between the 76ers business and basketball arms of the organization. She also played a critical role in the formation of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment and leads operations and communications between the venture's sports and entertainment properties, including the New Jersey Devils and the NHL, the Prudential Center, which is a top seven ranked performance venue in the US located in Newark, New Jersey. So this is going to be an incredible conversation. I'm so excited. Welcome to the show, Laura Price.
Thank you so much, Janice. It's such a pleasure to be here and to be talking to you and all your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's just start right away. I mean, you have an incredibly demanding job. These are unprecedented times. How have you been managing through the pandemic? Just give us the scoop. What's a day in the life for Laura these days?
Sure. Just to set the stage, you know, like most everyone else, my life has changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. We're an event-driven business. Yes. So we have concerts and games. So we are constantly on the move. We're in two locations, in Philadelphia and in Newark, New Jersey. And we also have a lot of meetings in New York. So I am up and down the turnpike quite frequently, just given the nature of our business. So that has come to a complete halt. Mm-hmm. Most travel has been sidelined. So I find myself at home where I normally was, you know, not there that often. So, you know, while it's been a complete change, there's been positives. We've gotten much more technologically advanced in terms of how we have meetings with Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, we always felt we had to have our meetings in person before. Mm-hmm. This has shown us that we do not have to do that, that we can have productive meetings and staff and, quite frankly, cut down the travel time. You know, I've been given, in some instances, 4 hours of my day back to do work where I would have been commuting. So that's different. And then, you know, what we would do moving forward and what I've done moving forward that I would keep is time management for sure. Mm-hmm. This has been a great lesson in how to take advantage of the time that's been given to you. Although, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is there's also that feeling that you're constantly on. So managing that balance of being available at any time of the day, because we are in front of our computers. You know, I too have struggled with that a little bit and trying to find the balance in my life. But, you know, overall, this has been trying times for everyone, and all of us have figured out a way to move forward in it. And, you know, keeping a positive attitude, focusing on process, and we're focused on, you know, when we go back to play, what is it going to be like, you know, for our fans, for our office staff. So we've been very busy, I think, like most businesses, in terms of how we're thinking about life post-pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And it's just so fundamentally changed in your business. I mean, it's just so incredible. And I agree with you that digital adoption that we've all really moved quickly to do, yes. You know, to your point, on the one hand, we're not on the road as often. I myself, you know, my schedule is so changed. But at the same time, I'm not sure if you're experiencing this as well, Laura, but this idea of when you talked about being on all the time, but also this idea that we don't necessarily have any breather between meetings. You know, you're not necessarily getting in the car and driving to the next meeting and having some downtime. Sometimes it's as little as like 4 deep breaths before the next Zoom call starts.
Absolutely. And I've been talking to my peers, you know, within the industry, outside of our industry. And one of the things that I've tried to focus on, and hopefully I will keep this up as we move into post-pandemic, is instead of doing Zoom calls all the time, I will try to schedule phone calls where I can actually go out and take a walk and take the call outside. So I'm at least breaking up the monotony of constantly sitting in front of my computer and at my desk and on a Zoom call. That has like very much helped my own mental psyche. So I encourage that with a lot of the employees that work with us as well. And, you know, you had mentioned just our business in general, the Herculean task that the NBA took on, and I would say the NHL and MLS, to have our games played in a bubble and with zero cases of COVID was a big sacrifice for not only the NBA employees, but the players that did it. And we proved that we could play the games. You know, we would like to come back to playing with fans, and it's different across each state. It's even different within each county, you know, in Philadelphia. The mayor has a different ruling than the governor of Pennsylvania. So we will be continuing to work on a plan that gets us back to getting fans in the building. I do not think that the bubble is sustainable for an entire season. And Adam Silver, you know, our commissioner, has gone out and said that, and Gary Bettman with the NHL, same thing. So pushing as long as we can until we find a vaccine so we can come back to a new norm. You know, there will be things that will be changed within a building, whether it's ticketless systems and have point of sale, which airports have now done, you know, where we grab and go, and really focused on safety and cleanliness in these buildings so people feel safe when they come back.
Mm-hmm. So important. I hear your passion. You absolutely love your job. It's a massive role that you have. Let's talk about it. You know, why do you love so much what you're doing? And it's very impressive how inclusive the culture is. So can you talk about that as well?
Absolutely. I've been really fortunate. My entire career has been in sports and specifically basketball. And growing up as a young woman, I was passionate about sports, and basketball quickly became my favorite sport. So, you know, my passion has driven me my entire career, and I've been so extremely fortunate to have been able to keep my career within that. You know, I've had to move, but anybody within the sports and entertainment industry, or anyone that quite frankly wants to be successful, does have to move around to get to aspire to, you know, what your highest goals are. And, you know, the culture that we have here at HBSE is incredible. We have focused on getting women leaders at the top. We have focused on giving a culture that is supportive of women that are mothers. You know, we have a chief human resources officer, a chief revenue officer, our VP of communications. They're all mothers with children at home. And in this industry, when we are all on, when most people get to come watch games and it's their time off, we're still working. So we work during the day, we work at night, we work weekends, and we work holidays. And having a culture that is supportive of the diversity within our organization is so critical to keeping women. And, you know, there's that recent study that just came out from McKinsey that there is a severe chance that women will leave the workforce because of COVID and the concerns that it's caused. And having a workplace that is supportive of women that have to be the teacher for their children at home, and that they can do meetings with Zoom and not have the fear of being left out if they're not in the office physically all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I deal with women in our organization, is they feel that they have to be everywhere all the time or they will be left out. And making sure that not just myself, but, you know, our CEO and our presidents are super supportive of these women, and they are. So having that culture of diversity for women and all staff, quite frankly, putting policies in place, you know, so we're diverse across the board, and that diversity of thought leads to innovation, and the statistics show it. You know, the numbers I think are similar, but, you know, 19% increase in return on investment in your company when you have diversity. And that's just diversity of thought with diversity of people. And it's so critical. And we're focused on that. We recently hired a chief diversity and impact officer, David Gould, and super excited about what he's going to accomplish for our organization along with all of us. We're focused on it. We have invested $20 million into the communities that we live, work, and play on this diversity initiative that includes gender. So we are super focused on this as an organization. And it's really exciting for me because I'm very passionate about this, and especially women. And, you know, me given the opportunity to be where I'm at, I feel a huge responsibility to give back to that younger generation of women that are the up and coming executives that will be running the company someday.
Absolutely. And I love hearing how intentional HBSE is about this whole idea of the diverse and inclusive culture, recognizing it as a competitive advantage and this place where women can thrive. I mean, when you look on the list, there are women in important roles all over, but it looks like it's not only gender, right? Like, this is a diverse company that sees the advantage of making space for innovation and creative ideas. I find it really inspiring, and I hear your passion. So it's very exciting.
Well, thank you. We can always increase the numbers, and we're extremely focused on that. That starts, you know, at early stages of career entry. The MBA has a foundation that they are now focused on kids coming out of high school into college and then helping them get jobs. Mm-hmm. So that just leads into us getting a talent pool where we can identify people, bring them into our organization. And then we have such a large company that allows us the opportunity to grow employees. So I am passionate about it, but, you know, we have a great culture and a great structure set up.
Yeah. Well, but it starts with intention, right? Like, you know, wanting that kind of an outcome. So when I go back in time, 1998, you became one of the first female vice presidents in the NBA, a career as a trailblazer. You know that young women look up to you. How do you think about this? I know you talked about keeping the door open. I know you talked about pathways for talent. What does it mean to you personally?
Yeah, to me personally, I didn't get where I was without people helping me. Mm-hmm. And it's really critical, especially in sports and entertainment. This is a very small world. So who you know matters, and networking is extremely important. So I would tell you that it's my responsibility, not just for women, but for men and people of all color, that I have an open door policy to come in, and everyone in this organization knows that. And I will do it for anyone in here. I also do it externally as well. If someone reaches out to me, I do take the time to talk to them, because I just feel it's so important to give back and to answer questions that they have. You know, and a lot of times I'll get that question, is like, are you the only female in a meeting? And 9 times out of 10, yes. But given if it's internally in our organization, I can't say that anymore, because we do have women at high levels that are sitting in these meetings. And it's really exciting for me to see that. But giving these young women and young men a chance to understand, like, what it takes, you know, from what I did and where I came from and where I am, and sharing that information is really important to me. And I will continue to do that as long as I am working, and even post working. You know, I just really think giving back to that next generation is critical.
And that's what it takes, actually, for change. It takes that kind of intention and deep passion that you clearly operate with. How about this, though? You talked about the open door policy, which is fabulous. But as a leader, difficult conversations. These are regular occurrences. So how do you approach them? And, you know, now I think it's a little bit harder because some of those we're having over Zoom. We're not even in person. What are some tips to share, strategies to use for people who want to get better at difficult conversations?
Absolutely. The first thing that I found is that having trust of the people that you are going to have the difficult conversations with, it makes it much easier to have those conversations from my perspective. I know delivering bad news is not easy, but when you're giving it to someone who knows that you have their best interest at heart, mm-hmm. we use a word around here called assume positive intent. Mm-hmm. And we always say is like, I'm coming to you to make you better. So let's start there and then let's have the conversation. So, you know, trust and being authentic is absolutely critical. And delivering bad news in this COVID environment right now, as you said, with Zoom, I am focused on the face-to-face with the Zoom, not doing phone calls, because I want them to see my face and my empathy and vice versa. I want to see how they are reacting, because I think that's super critical. And that's what we're missing in the social interactions, not being present with the person. So the trust thing is absolutely critical. You know, radical candor. We do these offsite meetings called Go Forward, and we did a session on radical candor, which is, you know, I'm going to be completely honest with you, but we're going to have a, you know, progression of where this is going to take us and delivering that message, because that is a common failure of most organizations. No one likes to deliver bad news, mm-hmm. but I feel the more direct you are, and again, having that trust, it makes it, again, I don't want to say easier. That's a tough word for it because you're delivering bad news, but it makes the conversation much more open and the person is accepting the information where they might not be if they didn't trust you.
Yeah, agree. I think those are so practical, the tips. And what was the, you said, expect positive intent?
Assume positive intent, API.
I love that. I agree that to me is, in terms of a culture, can be so transformative, because you're not going into things with your back against the wall. You're assuming right. that someone is coming forward in a positive way. I think that's beautiful. Can you describe for us, Laura, how your leadership style has evolved over time?
Sure. I would lean towards being more of a democratic leader, but I think, you know, given circumstances internally and externally, you tend to become a blend of that. So I have a little bit of coach in me as well, just coming from my athletic background. But, you know, I really think that that is more my style as a democratic leader. You know, I do value the group discussions and input. I will make the decision ultimately, but getting the buy-in, and we talked about this earlier, the diversity of thought, I think is absolutely critical to get to the best decision. And, you know, I care about our employees. I want to help them. I want to help them all grow. So I think that's where that coaching, that blend is for me. And, you know, you lean in a little bit, like me personally, I'm more of the pace setter. I set a really high bar for myself and I will jump in and, you know, hit goals. I'm very driven that way. So I have to at times pare that back. So I am not imposing my natural tendencies on people, because you have to manage each person differently. As a coach, you know that, you know, each player is motivated differently. So taking me out of it and what my natural tendencies are, I have really tried over time, you know, to become more democratic and that coaching balance.
Yeah. And so you've had a passion for basketball and you've been an athlete yourself all the way along. Can you talk about what you've learned about leadership, performance, competition, both from your own journey, but in particular, given that you're in an environment filled with elite athletes, what does that do to, you know, how you operate and how the organization operates in your view?
So being an athlete at a high level, there is a lot of goal setting and discipline and competitiveness that carries over into the business side for sure. You know, I'll give you a story early on that like has affected me throughout my entire career. So I was playing basketball and we had a female head coach and a JV male coach. And we would have to run suicides, which is touching lines in a certain amount of time. You're running, you know, back and forth.
They're and, deadly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And one day this woman was late. And the rule was, is if you didn't tell the coach, you were going to be late. For every minute that you're late, we all had to run these suicides. So one of the girls on our team was 22 minutes late. We had to run 22 suicides, and obviously we were not going to get them in that time. But the thing that became the most important was that we were coaching each other to touch the lines because we didn't want to cheat. Because if we were cheating, we were cheating ourselves and cheating our teammates. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me as awful as it was. And as much as we pushed through it, and, you know, it put me to a whole nother level to understand that I could push through things, but that cheating wasn't going to get us the ultimate goal of winning a high school championship, mm-hmm. Which we ultimately did win one. And, you know, so I use that just to say is that, you know, that's what sports taught me. I don't think you have to be in sports to have a successful career in sports and entertainment, but the culture, as you just mentioned, is very competitive. So, you know, teamwork, accountability, creative innovation, like those things matter because you're having to make decisions on the fly when you're playing sports. So those are all the things that I learned and I've used throughout my career. The competition thing, you know, it can sometimes turn bad if it's a win at all costs.
True.
So managing that is really important. But, you know, you see the highest level of athletes that are winning at a high level, whether it's LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, you know, and they talk about the Mamba mentality and those things, you know, that's the highest level of competition and getting in the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning and going above and beyond. So that's the mentality that I've learned. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier to you, I have to tailor that back sometimes because what I might do for myself might be too much for someone else, but they can be an incredible person on my team and they don't have to lead exactly the way that I do.
Yeah, I love that coaching approach to understanding the differences and that each person is bringing special gifts forward, right? And we need all of them.
Absolutely. Everyone has a role and everyone is important. And, you know, we're successful because of every person within the HBSE organization. So absolutely.
Yeah. And I think also that I think about my own sports experiences. For me, something else learned is winning with grace and losing with grace.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that like shaking hands at the end of the game right. after you've lost, very much so. Yeah. And I would say that I learned that as well. I mentioned I'm not a win at all cost person, mm-hmm. but competing at the highest level, absolutely. Setting the bar very high, absolutely. But, you know, understanding that we're in this all together at the end of the day, and there can only be one winner at the end of each season, right? That doesn't mean that we're losing everything. We make great gains if we go to the mm-hmm. finals, the championship. You know, our city, it impacts the city, it impacts the revenue, it impacts the psyche of our fans. Those are all wins that you have to try to look at the end of the day. And yes, we are all in this together. We're all one league, NHL, NBA. So try to look at it that way.
So what about a time you were fearless? I mean, I just think Laura Price is fearless every day and just going about her fearless life. But give us one example.
Sure. When I was deciding what I wanted to do with my career, I had a job in the Continental Basketball Association, and it was 1993. Mm-hmm. I started pursuing, trying to see if there was something else that I might be able to do. So I grew up in Boulder, Colorado. I went to college at Colorado State. I did not do any kind of traveling other than getting in a car and driving to Wichita, Kansas, and Texas, where my family was. So that was the extent of my travel. Mm-hmm. An opportunity came available at the NBA. So at the time of the CBA, I was a director mm-hmm. and I was making $32,000 a year. I'm dating myself here. So I'm not going to tell you what my age is, but you can figure out the pay. And I got a job opportunity at the NBA in New York for $27,000 at a coordinator. And I did not know one single solitary person. No one from college was in New York. No family members were on the East Coast. And I wanted the job in the NBA more than anything in the world. And it did not matter what my parents had said to me. They thought I was crazy. And I just wanted to move to New York. So I picked up, moved to New York. I lived in a hotel in Manhattan for a month while I tried to figure out who my roommate was going to be as I got to know people at work and where I was going to live. So coming from Colorado and moving to New York, I joked around and said I was the Mary Tyler Moore of New York. I had no idea what I was walking into, but I'm so glad that I was fearless at that moment and did it because that was the beginning of an incredible career for me.
Mm, I love that. So what are your tips then on saying yes, you know, on being comfortable, being uncomfortable around managing stress, building resilience? Because this is a beautiful example of fearlessness in the face of so much uncertainty. Do you have any tips to share?
You know, so I would say is that I think we all tend to get a little risk averse when things are uncertain, and that uncertainty causes stress. So for me, I've always tried to, and this could be taken negatively, so I just want to say, I always prepare for the worst. And that's just to look at every single angle of what potentially could happen. And then I'm prepared. You know, it gives me the flexibility to move, and I'm focused on solutions, not focused on negativity. I think, but focusing too much on, you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best, you can become risk adverse. So there is a danger of that. So I always say is just, you know, think ahead, having processes and setting goals lets you not get ahead of yourself and then have that uncertainty. And, you know, you're worried about what the next thing may happen. That is what I have always used. And, you know, people will come into me with problems and I'll say, I will listen to the problem, but I want you to come to me with solutions and let's talk through that. Because I don't want to hear complaining. I want to see how we can fix it and get to the end. So that's typically how I manage through those. And that's the advice I give to people when they come into my office. And the people that work directly with me know that they can come in, but they have to have a solution for me.
I tend to think of it like 10% on the problem, 90% on the solution.
Yes, exactly.
What's something you've done once that you never want to do again?
Okay, so I always say never, because every time I do that, I end up doing that thing. So the one thing I can promise you that I will never do again, I cannot eat seafood. I was trying to be politically correct and I ate it and found out that I had a severe allergic reaction to it. So I will never do something that trying to be politically correct in a situation that can cause me harm. So I guess I would say that. And the fish thing, I will never eat again because of my reaction. So that is my never say never. I just try not to do that because, you know, the situation when you say I'm never going to do that, it will change ultimately and it'll present itself, but different circumstances. And then I end up doing it. So.
I totally get that. But your body was saying like, we don't do fish, stay away.
Yes.
Okay. Take us back to the 10-year-old you. We know you were into sports, but, you know, and give me a sense, like how similar are you to that 10-year-old girl?
Sure. I would say I was very unsure of myself at that time. I was playing sports, you know, basketball I told you about, but I was the only girl on a little league baseball team.
Wow.
I was selected by one of the male teachers to be the first female coach for a team in our league that we had at our grade school.
Wow.
It helped my confidence. That's what I would have to tell you. And that person at 10 that was insecure and the drive to perfect is still with me today. But that insecurity is not there. You know, you learn as time goes on because you get exposure to things. And I am very much the learner and I want information and constantly consume. And that's why I rely on the staff because I can't know everything. And I want to hear all inputs because that's how you learn and that's how you make the best decision. So that insecure person at 10 years old has taken that and turned it into a drive to be the best that I can be and to, you know, to also help others be the best that they can be. And that's constantly learning and evolving and changing. So that I would say the difference from me being back then. And also I hated public speaking. I was terrified of
pretty good at it.
I was in class and I would make myself sick because I was so afraid to do it. And that's the biggest part of my job now. So anybody can overcome anything if they put their mind to it.
Oh, that's so inspiring. Yeah. It's a great reminder, isn't it? We just got to go for it as much as how stressful that must have been as that young you. That's a beautiful story. So given this incredible career in sports and entertainment, there must be many, many pinch me moments. Can you give us one of your favorites?
Absolutely. I was working at the NBA. It was 1996 All-Star Game in Cleveland. And that was the year they celebrated the 50 greatest players of all time. All 49 of them were there. Unfortunately, one was deceased. I got to organize all of them, put their jackets on them.
Wow.
To get them out on the court. So I was in the presence of 49 of the greatest players to ever play the game. And David Robinson had the NBA 850 book, and he was walking around asking for everyone's autograph. It was like one of the greatest moments just to be a part of that, you know, with me and my love for basketball.
Yeah.
So that was one of those moments where you're just like, wow. And then, you know, I'm going to throw one other one in there.
Please. If I can. Yeah.
Getting the Wise Woman of the Year award for my family, you know, for all the me moving away and me not being home on holidays because we played games. So for all the sacrifices that they made for me to get that award meant the world to me for my family. So that was another great moment for me. And I took that award for the family, you know, more than it was about me because of all the support that they had given me. So those are my two favorite moments.
Beautiful. And I got shivers. That's so special. Thank you for sharing it. So meaningful. Wow. And especially because you have such a love, a deep love for the game. Wow. Incredible. Mm-hmm. All right. So Laura, final question. What's your dream for the USA and for the world? You know, just that.
just that small little thing.
Yeah.
Sports has an incredible platform, and our players have a microphone that most people don't have. And I think we have an incredible responsibility to lead and educate and drive change. So immediately, right, you know, this time in this year, we've gone through a pandemic and social inequity and racial equity and gender equity. I will always fight for that. So for me, that's the first and foremost. And I would add just find a cure for COVID too. So we, you know, people will stop getting sick and we can get the death rate down. Like those are the two things that I hope for the world and for the USA.
Once again, I'm just covered in shivers. This has been such a powerful conversation. You're such an incredible inspiration. You have been listening to Laura Price. It's no surprise that she was named most powerful woman in sports in 2018 from Adweek. Also, Game Changers list from Sports Business Journal. So many awards, so many accolades. Such an inspiring voice. She is the Executive Vice President of HBSE and Chief Operating Officer, Philadelphia 76ers. It has been an absolute pleasure. And I hope, Laura, that you will promise to come back on the show and tell us more of your inspiring Pinch Me moments.
Janice, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all that you do for women and getting us on here and sharing all the stories of these incredible women that you've had on before me. I just thank you for all that you've done. And I would gladly come back anytime.
Yay. You heard it. She's coming back. It's a promise. And she's somebody who's good with her words. So we look forward to having you on the show again. Thank you again. Absolute pleasure, Laura Price.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors, BDC, Lockheed Martin, and Export Development Canada. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to Export Development Canada, the international risk experts, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. Supporting Canadian companies of all sizes succeed on the world stage, EDC takes your worries away and helps you grow your business with confidence. When your business has no borders, neither does your potential. Find out more at edc.ca/womenintrade. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.
I got a job opportunity at the NBA in New York, and I did not know one single solitary person. No one from college was in New York. No family members were on the East Coast. And I wanted the job in the NBA more than anything in the world. And it did not matter what my parents had said to me. They thought I was crazy. And I just wanted to move to New York. So I picked up, moved to New York. I lived in a hotel in Manhattan for a month while I tried to figure out who my roommate was going to be as I got to know people at work and where I was going to live. So coming from Colorado and moving to New York, I joked around and said I was the Mary Tyler Moore of New York. I had no idea what I was walking into, but I'm so glad that I was fearless at that moment and did it, because that was the beginning of an incredible career for me.
Subscribe to the Fearless Women Podcast to hear more.